Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Cody Dekoff, who performs under the name Chicago Farmer. The new Chicago Farmer record, Homemade, is out March 6th. In this conversation, we discuss the origins of some of the material, as well as Dekoff's origins as a songwriter. All that, as well as how he has stayed close to his small-town family. That's Cody Dekoff on Into Music, coming up now. I'm really curious about, if you remember kind of like what inspired you to start writing. Was it always songs, or was it kind of like just sort of ideas that would kind of come to you?
My hometown was population 1,700 people, kind of a small, sleepy farming town. Both sets of grandparents and great-grandparents were farmers. My dad kind of took another path, and I kind of did too. After I baled a bunch of hay, I was kind of like, this isn't it for me. And I was literally in high school study hall one day. I used to just kind of daydream, kind of go on adventures in my head. One day, I just kind of started writing them down. And I guess my imagination just kind of started rolling, and I started writing them down. They were kind of more like stories, and then I started rhyming them, and then they were kind of more like limericks. And then I did take some money that from baling hay and stuff, and got a guitar and just started kind of turning those little poems from study hall into songs. Really something productive to do. We had a lot of people in my high school that were really creative. We had these guys who used to sit in the back of the room, and they would draw these pictures. They'd be wearing t-shirts that said like Iron Maiden and Metallica, and they would draw pictures like that. And so I was like, I want to do that. And I realized quickly I could not do that. I was terrible at drawing and visual arts, but I found my creative bone was a writing. Once I got that creative spark, it never stopped. And I've been doing it ever since.
Yeah, because one of the things, so I grew up in a really small town in Michigan, and some of the images in the songs, I'm like, oh yeah, that's the kind of thing that when you're in that kind of, I think, rural setting, and sometimes you just see weird things, right?
Yeah.
and they capture your eye, and you're like, like mattress, right? Like, how did this appear? Where did that come from?
The song Mattress was, I was sitting on my front porch, and I used to live next to this rental house, and about every 6 to 8 months, the people in the rental house would get the boot. They would kind of get kicked out for one reason or another, and they would leave all their stuff on the front lawn. I don't know why that was the case, but like three tenants in a row just kind of left their stuff on the front lawn. So I would drink my coffee on my porch with my guitar in the morning and stare at their mattresses and stuff, and started seeing mattresses everywhere else on my travels, whether it's small town, medium town, big city. I would see mattresses everywhere, and I kind of thought this could be a song. And then I kind of second guessed it for a really long time. And then our guitar player was late to practice one day, and we were like, man, why are you so late? And he said, I-57 was backed up for miles. There were these mattresses all over the middle of the interstate. And so I was like, okay, there's my sign. I got to just write this song now, even though it could be silly. And it is silly, but, you know, I guess it resonates with people. It's probably our most requested song and our loudest sing-along of the shows these days. So you never know. Sometimes you gotta answer the call when it comes.
But yeah, I mean, that's, you know, like I was saying, that's that thing where it's like you kind of, I think if you are in an environment where things are maybe slow enough or quiet enough, you get tuned into, like, you could have just like, there's stuff's on the lawn, but to you know, spin it and see that there are patterns and so forth is something that I think a lot of people aren't tuned into.
Yeah. I think it's something simple too, going back to the study hall days where you're just kind of wandering and imagining things, and then you kind of start thinking, well, how did that mattress get there? What were the people going through? Was it an old mattress, or did it actually, was it a new mattress that fell off the top of their car? Start thinking about, you know, the good and the bad and the mishaps in life, and why that mattress got there, and who the people who used to use the mattress, what are they doing now? What are they up to? What in life are they going through and dealing with?
You know, so when Angie sent me the initial, I think, press release, and I saw Peshtigo, I flipped out because I went to high school like very close to Peshtigo.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Wow.
I can't tell you. There was a truck stop that we used to go to and like smoke cigarettes and drink coffee, you know, late at night in Peshtigo. And so I would drive by the signs for the fire museum like three times a week. So I was like, oh, I got to listen to this song. So how did you become aware of the Peshtigo fire? And
there was a lot of fires happening out west. And of course, there have been several over the years in Colorado, and even some musicians that I had known who lost their homes. A band from Cincinnati called The Tillers had this great song about the general store burning down. And then there was a venue in Chicago a couple years ago that caught on fire. And we had this place, a local haunt, out in the middle of nowhere in the country here called Green Gables that burnt down. So I don't know, there's just all these fire themes kind of coming through me. And so I really started looking into the Chicago fire, obviously, and learning about that. And that's when I came across the Peshtigo fire that I had no idea happened the same day. And, you know, and so being that, you know, it might be cliche for Chicago farmer to write about the Chicago fire, I looked into this Peshtigo thing, and I couldn't believe it. I never even heard of it, you know, the biggest forest fire in the history of our country, and kind of learned how it came to be about. You know, I had this melody kind of in B minor, and B minor is kind of dark, kind of a dark chord. And I was like, you know, I'm kind of, when I explain songs, or I talk about songs, or even some of the songs I write, they're a little bit lighthearted, but this was a pretty dark, gruesome, crazy situation. And I just started reading about it, and it started putting my thoughts about it and what I read into that melody. And the next thing I knew, I had it. And then I remembered on my way to like up at like Hiawatha Music Festival and places in the UP, I remember driving by it. So it sounded familiar, but yeah. And then it just all came together. But what a crazy, crazy story.
And if I'm not mistaken, it was not only the same day as the Chicago fire, but it was more deadly, like in terms of casualties.
Oh yeah, way more deadly. Way more deadly. And yeah, you know, Peshtigo being north of Green Bay, and the Chicago fire the same day, and Chicago stealing all its thunder. I think maybe that's where like the rivalry might have came from, you know, between Chicago and Green Bay, which is still raging right now. But yeah, no, it was really just horrific, just a tornado of fire and people jumping into the river with the livestock and their animals, and people jumping into wells. And some people went to a church to pray, and those were actually some of the few people that actually survived. It's just a scary, dark tale. And so, yeah, kind of got to write about it all and just came together, I suppose.
You kind of answered my other question, which is, so it sounds like you've been through the area, because I felt, having spent all that time, I was like, oh yeah, this is what it's, there is that kind of darkness, like in the UP, northern Wisconsin, sometimes that comes with the desolation
in the woods. Yeah.
And I think that comes across very well in the tune. So,
well, cool. I was trying to express what it felt like, because it kind of came out of nowhere, and it came, you know, fast, and there was nowhere to hide. So it was kind of fitting. We recorded it in Cannon Falls, Minnesota, at a studio called Pachyderm, which is where Nirvana recorded their In Utero album. So I kind of was trying to put a little alternative grunge angst into the singing in the song to kind of make it, you know, a little more graphic. So hopefully it worked.
That's supposed to be like a cool studio. And I know a lot of people use it to this day.
That, yeah, there are.
Active. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really cool place. Very inspiring. Got a little creek running through the back, and it's in the middle of nowhere. So Yeah, very, very inspiring place. It was my first time, but I guess, Prince has been there, and all the furniture's from the era that it used to be. Nothing's changed much, so it's pretty cool. Very high tech, modern studio, very old school couches and carpet and the whole and kitchen and the whole thing is pretty cool.
You could say with some of that furniture, yes, PJ Harvey sat and ate crackers on this couch.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. But I'm trying to get back up to the UP or schedule a few things so I can stop in Pesh to go. I would like to go to that museum and learn a little bit more about it. And I've read some stories. There are a few survivor accounts and stories about it. And it's just wow, hell blowing through town, a tornado of fire blowing through town. And scary stuff and happened right up there.
I also wanted to ask you about Tina Hart's Mustang. I love this. This is just a great like story in the song.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah, that was the last song I wrote for the album, and I didn't really have a story song, and I usually do. And back to what we were talking about, the study hall, if I need an idea for a story song, I pretty much just go back to my hometown and drive around, and usually an idea comes up pretty quick. I started thinking about all of the songs that I had, and I didn't really have a car song. And I started thinking about all the cars that I had in high school, and I didn't want to write about any of those. They weren't worthy. And all the girls in my high school had really cool cars. There was a girl with a T-Bird. There were some really cool cars. And then Tina Hart, she's a real person. Tina is her real name. She had an 85 Mustang. And I was like, I'm gonna write a song about that car and about her. I thought about changing the name for a while, but I couldn't. It just, Tina Hart's just there. You got to use it. And she's heard the song and she approves. So I was very happy about that. But it was definitely just brought me back to a lot of high school nights. That's kind of what we did in high school. We drove around. We had four benches downtown. We didn't have any stoplights. We had four benches in downtown, and you would kind of hang out on a bench for a while, and somebody would pick you up, and you would ride around, and then that was it. We would hang out on those four benches and ride around. That's what we did in high school. That's pretty much it. So, just kind of started bringing back thoughts from that. And when I was writing, I was kind of going through like pictures of my high school yearbook because there was only like 40 of us in my whole class. And so it was kind of fun to retrace my steps and go back to that part of my life. It's kind of nostalgic.
Those like teenage hangs and the people that you encounter. Ours was the marina, because on the Michigan-Wisconsin border, you're in a Twin Cities kind of thing,
Oh,
and
yeah.
actually Tri-City, and so you have kids from all the cities. They find their way to the marina, and that's how you meet people, right? And you're like,
Yeah.
oh, they don't have cool people like that at my school. And
The next major city, not even major, was probably Peoria, which was about 45 minutes away. So we were just in our tucked in our little town. So yeah, benches, cars, and cornfields. That was kind of it.
but that's good source material, right? Because
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And sometimes it felt like a drag growing up in a small town, but looking back on it, it was actually pretty great. It was pretty, life was pretty easy. Sometimes you long for that kind of stuff now. And I live in a bigger town now. I live in Bloomington, Illinois, but still get back to the hometown. The grandparents, the old farmhouse is still there. Still have some family there, so get there once in a while.
Do you ever throw bales?
No, that's that those days are long over. I said I might be a broke musician, but I'm not bailing anymore. Hey, I'll trade that in any day.
Worked on a farm, and then I would help like friends, families, bale, and I would get like these massive welts.
Oh yeah. My cousins were like 6'2", 6'3", and so they made it easy work of baling hay, and I had to like heave them up there and really work at it. So it was rough. But yeah. And then getting in the barn too, and these allergies, get those allergies rocking, and got it out of my system. Don't need it anymore.
I wanted to ask you just about two more things specifically
Yeah.
with the record. One of them, of course, was the $20 bill, which, there
Sure.
again, I think just kind of taking something relatively simple to begin with.
My grandfather passed away just shy of 102. My grandma is still alive. She just turned 97. And besides the last maybe year of his life, and besides being in the Army and being in college for a little bit, he lived in that same farmhouse his entire life. And she lived there with him since she was probably about 20. Yeah, they're just huge inspirations in my life. Some of my favorite people. And my grandpa was a storyteller for sure. And, you know, grandma was a little bit quieter. Usually just let grandpa talk, but she's smart as can be too. So my grandpa was kind of a country boy through and through, grew up on the farm. My grandma was from Peoria originally. So she had a little street smarts kind of riding around on the bus around Peoria, which was a pretty rough town. She used to always give me like a $5 bill to put in my shoe for emergency. And then when she found out I was going to be a musician, she started giving me a 10. And then when she found out I was moving to Chicago, she's like, you're going to need a 20. So I kept getting raises over the years. And it just felt like even though I was up there in the city, pretty lonely, just feeling really out of place. But I still felt like, you know, my roots and my family were with me and my grandparents especially. So I feel like they were with me up there. I kind of, you know, that's the kind of thing about your family is you kind of take them with you wherever you go. And that's kind of what really inspired that song. And really my life of being kind of, you know, growing up in a small town, but then also following my dream up to Chicago and all the positives and negatives that come with both, but, you know, still coming out on the other side with, you know, family still attached and those roots still happening.
You've got one cover on here, the Ted Hawkins tune, Sorry You're Sick.
Yeah.
How'd you encounter that? Yeah.
I had a friend play it for me several years ago, and I was just like, I love that song. I love the emotion in his voice. And then I kind of forgot about it. And when the pandemic came around, it was kind of like, there's the song, you know, that's kind of like the perfect song. And we used to do like a live stream on Tuesday nights at a bar in Urbana, Illinois called the Rose Bowl. And we just started playing that song and we just couldn't stop. One night we played it twice in a row. I don't know. It was just an addicting song. And we just were kind of like, all right, we need to record this song. We played it so much. And the band had it pretty tight. And we, you know, it's kind of like one of those songs where it's like, you're never going to touch the original, just the essence of Ted Hawkins and his voice and his guitar, but we kind of put our own spice and flavor on it just because we loved it so much and couldn't stop playing it. So we finally recorded it. So maybe after we play it another 800 times on this release tour, maybe we can put it to rest for a little bit and then bring it back someday. But it's just such a beautiful tune.
So it sounds like at least some of the songs on the album, you've tried them out live. You mentioned that, you know, people are calling out, you know, for specific tunes. Is that part of the process for you, is to just sort of, you know, throw something out in front of an audience and say, okay, what do you think? What's the barometer here?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, before I take it to the crowd, I'm down here in my basement howling these tunes out and beating on the guitar and seeing what works for me and what doesn't. When I wrote the Mattress song, I kind of knew like people are going to get a kick out of it. But then, you know, Tina Hart's Mustang is like, there's no choruses in that song. It's like, it's 6 minutes. There's no choruses. It's just like 10 verses. So it's like, is this going to go over okay? And, you know, and for the most part it does, but you never really know until you get out there. And a lot of it depends on the room you're in. You know, I just played a kind of like a more listening room environment last week, and I played Tina Hart's Mustang and everybody loved it. And then you can kind of get into a rowdy club or something and some of it gets missed, but that's just part of it. But if it works for me and I like it, then I share it with everybody and then we'll see what happens.
Well, that's going to be one of my other questions too, because it's like, I'm imagining the live shows as being pretty loud and high energy. And yet you've got these songs that have these words. So it's like, is it harder sometimes with the volume and everything to, you feel like, to kind of carry the story at those levels?
Yeah. I mean, I was a folk singer for about 15 years, just troubadouring around myself with my guitar and my harmonica. And it was only about 2019 that I really got these guys together to start playing with me. And they come from all different styles of music and all kinds of different genres. Our guitar player is like into heavy metal, and our keyboard player and bass player were in a jug band. Our drummer plays jazz. So it's all weird, but I think they all kind of understand that it's about the song. And so obviously these songs work when I'm solo troubadouring around in these small little listening rooms. But even when we get to the clubs, I think the band knows if it's time to rock out, rock out. But when it's time to let these words out and tell the story and the essence of the song, they're pretty good at bringing it down and letting that shine through, which I'm pretty happy about. And that's why I keep them around. If they didn't do that, I wouldn't keep it around, but they do. They get pretty good at it, so. Yeah, but it is easy, especially I have bands that I love that I'll go see in a larger place, and sometimes the words get muffled or covered up with a blanket and they're not coming through, and that's I find that pretty frustrating as a listener too, because that's kind of what I'm there for partially is to hear the words and the lyrics and get the stories. And yeah, there's a fine balance, and after you do it for a while and tour enough, I think you figure out how to do it.
Well, I want to close out, and this is, I don't know if this is a question or just kind of an observation, but I feel like a lot of times records come along and they are, it's not that they're stuck in a moment, but they represent something that's going on, or they speak to something that's going on. And I feel like this record has that kind of sensibility to it, to pay attention to sometimes the smaller things, stay connected, find the good in people and things like that. And I think that's like right now something that is going to resonate with people.
Yeah, I think so too. A lot of these are kind of individual songs, individual stories, but I think together maybe they tell a little bit of a story. The homemade is really back to my grandma. She's 97. She can't live in the farmhouse by herself anymore. And the assisted living was just too expensive. So right now she lives for a month with my mom, and then the next month she goes and lives with my aunt. So she kind of bounces back and forth. And so my aunt and my mom have kind of become homemades, I suppose. And I think that's just a little bit what the album's about, is kind of our crazy and hectic world with all these crazy things happening. We got to take care of each other. Yeah, keep family and roots in mind. And if there's still fires burning that need to be put out, but I think we gotta get back to just, the simple things. Don't forget the simple things in this complicated world, and take care of each other, and just get back to being good to one another instead of just being so divided. Let's figure out what we got in common and work on it.
You've been listening to a conversation with Cody Decoff. Decoff performs as Chicago Farmer, and the new Chicago Farmer record called Homemade is out March 6th. You can learn more about Chicago Farmer at chicagofarmer.com. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org and find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. Thanks for listening. And as always, we like to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torin Anderson. See you next time.